what the hell is going on with Lamar Odom?
Oh, man, I couldn't believe it when I read it.
So
I hope it's not true, but it is true. You can just tell.
It's one of those things you don't really need confirmation about, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Mini-sode!
Watch out! Here it comes. Watch out! Here it comes.
Watch out! Man, I just can't, I think I might have just put the final nail in your coffin.
Well, I was thinking about this. Is this the Lakers putting a schmear campaign out so no one else will touch him? So they can sign him for cheap?
Wouldn't surprise. It is LA, but I think you'll find they would have signed him already, but they might have caught wind of what's happening.
Surely the whole being traded from a team hasn't had that bigger effect on him.
I don't think it was that. Getting traded from the Lakers.
It feels like that's where it all went wrong, though, right? Gets traded from LA, really not happy about it. Goes to Dallas. A lot of good things could have happened for him in Dallas, I felt like, but for one reason or another, just didn't show up. His head wasn't in it. I mean, seemed to bounce back, you know, when he was traded to the Clippers.
Yeah, but he didn't have a great season. And also, people forget, when he did get traded from the Lakers in the off-season, I think his cousin died in a car accident. He was close to. I think they were more like brothers than cousins. And the limo that he was riding in, I think hit and killed someone. And I don't think things were too good in his marriage. So, yeah, it's probably all just hit him at once and he's gone off the rails.
He really has.
It's such a sad thing. I mean, he was coming off a great year with the Lakers. Apparently he played drug-free last year. But then
straight back on it when the season ends.
Yeah, so, wow, what do you do, man? Heck, I think his career's just died on the arse.
I think this is the end of him, really.
Absolutely. Who's going to sign him? Maybe the Bobcats, that's it.
Jeez, we don't want to send him into a deep depression. Speaking of questions, there's an answer. Allen Iverson, set to officially retire at 38 years old, hasn't played since about 2010. 14-year career, 11-time All-Star, one of the best, I suppose, pound-for-pound scorers, as he's been dubbed many a time. But your thoughts?
I thought he retired years ago.
Zing!
Was there anyone expecting to see Iverson pop up anywhere?
I've got a hit. There was a small part of me, Vince. There was a small part of me just thought that, you know, he could tail on somewhere. Like
Trust good old Hank McCoy.
What are you implying, good sir?
Oh, man, you just want the most. The things that have no chance to happen, you really want to happen. You're like me with Shaq. Like, when Shaq was 40, you still expected him to score 30 in the game. You're the same with AI. He signs with a team, you're like, no, man, he can still play. He can drop 30, I'm telling you.
Dude, I'm telling you.
You're the same with bloody Gilbert Arenas.
Hey.
He can still play, man.
Gil can still ball, man.
Yeah, he's a good role player.
But, man, I mean...
Yeah, I thought he retired, like, without officially retiring.
Yeah, I mean, well, what? He had the year over in Turkey, or the half year over in Turkey. I believe he did play an exhibition game in China with Stephen Marbury. I mean, there was always the whole rumours of him coming back and giving the NBA another shot. He turned down the D-League offer.
But even when he was, like, filling at 34, you know, he was 34 years old, and they were bringing him off the bench, and he's like, I should be starting. It's like, no, you're 34, you've lost a step, come off the bench. He would have bought himself a couple more years in the league as if he'd just taken that mindset of, like, all right, I'm not what I used to be, but I can still help a team.
I definitely think that ego shot him.
Oh, big time.
10 great years in Philly. I mean, you're right. He could have had that whole Jason Terry role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, specialist six man with the green light to shoot. I mean, what more could he really wanted?
Apparently to start.
I mean, I think he's, you know, since then come to regret making those decisions and, you know, kicking up the fuss he kicked in Memphis. But, you know, some guys just take a little bit longer.
Yep. And plus, they've got guys in their ears. You know what it's like. They've got guys in their ears saying, hey, man, you should be starting. You could still be 30 and 0.
I wanted to ask you, though, I mean, for me, Allen Iverson was, growing up, everything I wanted to be in a basketball player.
Short and wiry.
Can get his shot off any time. You know, did it his way totally, to a fault. Really, to a fault. I mean, what would be your favourite Allen Iverson memory?
Oh, man. I got to be honest. I wasn't a huge Allen Iverson fan.
Yeah.
So I don't really have anything that sticks out. What I do remember of Allen Iverson is just what I admired most about him was just because he was so small, he was just a real tough nut and would play with injury. And that's what I liked about him. We all know he could score a huge amount of points and stuff like that. But I guess if I had to put something down, it'd be that whole playoff run when they made the finals. It was a perfect team for him as well.
Yeah.
One scorer and 11 guys who would just work. But yeah, I don't really have a one major highlight. I was just never a big fan.
I really, really enjoyed the whole him and Vince Carter just bouting it out in the playoffs and both dropping 50.
Yeah.
It was when Vince was at his peak, it was when Iverson's, you know, stardom was at an all-time high. It was that year's MVP. It was 2001, I think.
Yeah.
You know, that whole team was, you know, they were questioning earlier in that year whether to even trade Iverson or to keep him. And apparently it was Matt Geiger that kept him in there because I think it was a package deal, if I remember correctly, of Geiger and Iverson to Detroit. But Geiger had to waive a clause to say that, yeah, he wanted to be moved and refused.
How could he have a clause?
I know, right?
He's just not that valuable.
I know, right? It's just like, wow, Matt Geiger, you know, that one move, basically you earned your oil, all that crazy money they threw at you in Philly that you earned by not being wanted to be traded. Yeah, I mean, of course, we, you know, we've had the countless quotes from the practice interview.
Yeah, which has been played to death.
Flogged to
death. Can we stop?
Death.
Do not play that on this podcast, please.
No sound bites?
No. I will smash you. Every podcast or someone who's a blogger or something is
podcasting. We talk about podcasting. Here we are sitting in front of our laptops and we're supposed to be the premier basketball heads of Australia and we're in here talking about podcasting.
I hate you so much right now. Oh man, look, that team, when you think about it, man, they had Tyron Hill, Mutombo, George Lynch, McKee, Snow, Rajah Bell, Geiger. Who else was on there? Jermaine Jones.
They just gutted out wins, really.
I mean, and Iverson. And it's like, that team should be in the finals.
That team shouldn't make 8 seed.
You know, Iverson just, Larry Brown's coaching, Iverson, and those guys just sticking to a role and busting their asses, man. They nearly...
It's just funny because, I mean, before the show started, I sent you a text because I was thinking about Iverson and how he would weigh up against other point guards now, you know, especially from the, you know, from 2001. And I don't think there's a guard really that could stay with him. But I did ask you, you know, who you thought was better, Chris Paul or Allen Iverson? Because I kind of thought to myself, well, I feel kind of Chris Paul's almost in that same mold where it's like he hasn't had enough talent around him. But then I was thinking to Allen Iverson, I'm like, well, he got to the NBA Finals in 2001 with even less talent. I mean, just heart and just left it all on the floor every night.
Everything you just said then, and you know, the guy was just a tough nut.
I mean, how many times in a game would you see Iverson, you know, be absolutely creamed to the ground and just get up?
Yeah, like I said, man, that's one thing I really did admire about him, just... There's a lot of softies around out in the NBA, but he wasn't one of them.
One of the things that I was actually surprised of looking at, just a quick glance at some of the stats, was he had 76 40-plus games.
Impressive.
That's pretty crazy, right? I didn't think it'd be that high, to be honest with you. I mean, I can remember a handful. But 76 of them. And he wasn't even that bad when he went out to Denver either. I mean, that's just...
He was good in Denver. You could tell he wasn't the same AI, but he was still pretty good.
Do you think he hit his potential, or do you think he's one of those guys that, you know, could have been a bit more?
Look, first thought is I think he hit it. You saw the decline. It was minimal, but you still saw it in Denver.
Well, I suppose what I mean by it is, do you think he could have sustained his potential a lot longer if he'd have worked that talent? I mean, because a lot of the reports are that, you know, basically, yeah, he didn't show up the practices. He didn't really work on his game. I mean, you know, he wasn't that gym rat, you know, like a Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan. You know, he was never that guy, but I mean, he still left it all out of there on the floor, don't get me wrong, but do you think he could have sustained it a bit longer?
Well, look, if he was that gym rat like your Steve Nash and Jordan Kobe, he probably would have been a high scorer still at 34.
Mm.
Instead of, like we were talking about, coming in and Philly saying, how about you come off the bench, and him cracking it.
Yeah.
So, if you looked after your body a bit more and worked hard, like all those guys we mentioned, you would be starting and still averaging, pardon me, mid-20s.
Yeah.
High 20s. But who knows, man? Maybe he had a knee that was starting to just bother him more and more. Because when he got to Detroit, you could tell even that, like, he was worse in Detroit. Like, even though he averaged 17 a game, he wasn't as good as he was in Denver. And that was when the decline started even more.
I don't know. I just thought the whole timing of him being, you know, officially set to retire, I was kind of like, what does that even mean? He hasn't played since 2010, but I mean, if he's officially retiring, if he's officially calling it quits, then I salute the guy because I grew up watching him. I love the whole him rebelling against the league rebelling against him. I love everything that unfolded, and then for him to turn the league on its head and become almost infamous. Do you know what I mean?
Dude, we used to go to, when you were going to play your games at night, there was Allen Iverson jerseys everywhere.
Yeah.
It was crazy. He was like the poster boy for the NBA.
Yeah.
Here in Australia, everyone was wearing a bloody 76ers Iverson jersey. I reckon if there's 100 houses in a street, I reckon 80 of them would have an Iverson jersey tucked away in there somewhere.
In a cupboard somewhere in the back.
Bloody hell.
Now, I want to jump from Iverson. I wasn't sure if I wanted to bring it up, but I'm going to talk about it because we have talked a little bit about Milwaukee.
Yep.
in the past few shows. But Larry Sanders gets an extension, 4 years, $44 million or around thereabouts. Only 24 years old. Before I get into the whole, is this the right direction for Milwaukee? You know, like they let Monta walk, they let Jennings walk. During the playoffs, you had Larry Sanders blast his team, basically yelling at them after, I think it was the game 3 loss to the Heat, saying that, you know, they need to start playing for each other and not worrying about next season and, you know, free agency, which of course really stirred Monta Ellis and Jennings. And apparently there was, let's say, fisticuffs broken up before it got too serious between Ellis and Sanders. We fast forward to now and Sanders has a contract extension. I mean, is it the right direction for Milwaukee? Did they make the right choice? I mean, looking at the numbers, 9.8 points per game, 9.5 rebounds, 2.8 in blocks, which was second in the NBA, all in only 27 minutes.
Okay, here's the thing. I like it because he's only playing 27 minutes. He's putting up decent numbers. Yeah. He's going to be clearly their starting center. He's given him everything he's got. He's not a guy who's going to demand the ball. And the biggest thing for me is finally, they've got a guy, even though he's not a superstar, he's not even a bloody star, he's just a darn good role player, but they've finally got a guy who just might try and change the culture down there.
He generally seems to want to be in Milwaukee.
Wants to be there. Finally, someone is talking about championships down there, because he wants to win a championship like probably most players do.
This is the thing.
There's never anyone down there in Milwaukee saying what he just said. Let's play for each other. Let's become a good team and then become a great one later on. Like, this is from Larry Sanders, man. He's going to be there. You're going to get guys come in and be way better players than Larry Sanders, but he will be that leader of that team.
Well, I just think it's funny. You know, maybe, you know, we don't know the whole story. We don't know the whole, I mean, because it's obvious the guy has just worked his tail off. To have that breakout season last year, you know, you compare that to the season before where, you know, he basically couldn't stay on the court. it's just really amazing. But I mean, if they have, if they do have some, or if Sanders does have more untapped potential, I suppose my next question is, are teams really built around defensive anchors still? I mean,
2 years ago, Dallas won a championship with a defensive anchor.
True.
Even though Hakeem was an awesome scorer and rebound, he was a defensive anchor.
KG?
KG was a defensive anchor. I mean, Kendrick Perkins wasn't a great shot blocker, but he clogged up the middle, and if you were coming in, you were earning it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like the team around Sanders, but I kind of do like the direction.
Well, attitude-wise, Cole and getting things right down there, at least they've got Guy and Brandon Knight, who they brought in to replace Jennings. At least, as far as I can tell, he's not a troublemaker. He's not one of those, I'm just going to take 20 shots and have two assists as your point guard. Look, there's two nice pieces there. It's finally a start. I'm just wrapped with Sanders' attitude. It's awesome.
Well, Vince, there's a big elephant in the room on this show.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
There's a big elephant. There's a big underlying issue we should just air out right now. Because it's building. It's building. This elephant's getting bigger. There's not much room left on the couch here.
Tell you what.
The Lakers. They're wearing sleeve jerseys next year.
Have you seen these bloody things?
I have not seen the Lakers sleeve jerseys. I just read about it, had a quick little chuckle to myself, and thought, my goodness.
Guy at work said to me the other day, he goes, what do you think about your boys wearing the T-shirts? Because he knows I hate them. And I said, you know what the NBA's doing, mate? I said, you know that girl you know that's just a girl with benefits? And all of a sudden, after about a month, you notice the toothbrush is there. Then a couple of weeks later, you might see a couple of items of clothing in your walk-in wardrobe.
Well, there's a bag.
Or she's left a brush there, and she's starting to leave her shoes there, and all of a sudden...
She's using your shampoo.
She's gradually just moving in. This is what Stern's doing with these bloody T-shirts. He's got a couple more teams. Now it's like, how many of them are wearing T-shirts now? Nine?
Keep your dirty sleeves off our jerseys.
Oh, my God!
I don't know about you, but every fan I've spoken to dislikes it. Like, a lot of people don't mind it if it's a part of, like, some sort of alternate jersey. Like, they're going to wear it for, like, a handful of games. But no one I've spoken to wants nothing.
There's no handful of games. This is shit. They are shit. They look shit. They are shit. This is about selling jerseys for some bloody revenue raising. I could not give a stuff about making money off these things for the NBA. I cannot watch a bloody... I will not watch a Laker... And I tweeted this the other day, and Pumper from Hoops Podcast could not believe I said it. He didn't think I was serious. Any game that Lakers are playing and they're wearing these pitiful T-shirts, I cannot watch. It is not basketball. It's not what you wear when you're playing basketball.
Several games, apparently. Several games they're going to wear them.
So they're absolute shies, and they are.
So is that going to be seven games you're not watching?
Absolutely. I can't watch it. Those Golden State ones they wore last year made me sick. It is not tradition.
I don't know why they can't take it to the players and at least take a vote on it or something.
Why aren't the players kicked up a fuss about a bloody ball they tried to introduce a few years ago. But this one, we'll wear them. No, don't wear them. Steph Curry's the only one that's come out and said, oh, no, I don't like them.
Well, Steve Nash did suggest last season that each player should be able to, you know, to choose his own uniform preference.
Look, is he saying you should be able to wear a T-shirt and your teammate doesn't have to?
Well, I think
they're not going to allow that.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is that, you know, players should maybe have a bit more of a say on it, and that's outrageous. I mean, and I don't like change, so of course.
It really burns my cannolis, man. Basketball is played in jersey-style singlets, man. You do not touch that. And I'm saying to get anyone out there who thinks they look good, because I'll tell you, I've seen 100 tweets saying this shit.
Yep.
If you like it, you're just trying to be different because you're a putz. I'm telling you, far out. I just hate them. It is not NBA. It is not basketball. You do not play basketball in that kind of fashion. God help me.
Every week, we ask the Courtside members on Facebook, all caps Courtside, what topics you'd like to hear us talk about on the next mini-sode. We've had some interesting requests. Apparently, Cam just wants to slap me for all my Laker bashing.
It'll be a half-ass slap because he's in Queensland, so half-ass state.
Zing! Courtside faithful Brenton Cunningham hits us with, what is the best or most insightful basketball documentary or biography you guys have seen?
Oof.
Tough one off the bat.
Good one too.
Yeah.
By Richie. I really enjoy Hoop Dreams. I also enjoy Broke. Also enjoy the Chris Herron story.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoy...
I think you only wanted one.
Sam, oh, I'm giving him a nice little smallish board. the Sam Bowie one, I think it's Going Big or something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, check them all out.
What They're, about Once Brothers?
Oh, thank you. Once Brothers is fantastic.
I really enjoyed More Than a Game about LeBron James and just, you know, before he hit the NBA and that team he had and the run they made. The Fab Five doco for me has to be right up there.
Yep.
I also really enjoyed Mr. Russell's House, which was a small little, doco piece by Bill Simmons interviewing Bill Russell. Just the insight, just because Bill Russell was so, you know, disconnected from the fans in Boston.
Was that filmed at Russell's house or something?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I did see parts of that.
That was excellent. That was really good. And probably the last really good one I saw... I'll have to go with the Dr. J documentary from NBA TV.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
It was really insightful. It was really, just a really good look at the league and how it came to be. But, yeah, great question.
Well, it's very good.
And Above the Rim.
I haven't watched that in years.
Because if you're going to die, it's going to be slapping the backboard off the top of a building. I mean, when I was a kid, I was like, if I die, I hope it's like that. And who can forget the old time of playing against yourself? Get off of me! Ugh!
And also check out the air up there. And Eddie with Whoopi Goldberg, John Sally, and Rick Fox.
Did you say the air up there?
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon? Yeah. First I fake left, and you think I'm going left. Oh, boy.
Let me tell you, if I'm faking left, I ain't going left because I can only go right.
Oh, Brenton, look what you've started. Our next question comes from Gramps Walker, and he wants to know sleeves versus singlets. Well, we kind of covered this, but...
Just on a note, Gramps Walker, your Celtics are going to suck this year.
They are going to be pretty interesting.
Sorry, Gramps, but they're going to suck.
Our next question comes from our good friend over at Timbal's Explosion, Joey! He wants to know, Corey Brewer stated on a Minnesota station that he would never have come back if David Kahn was still here. Kahn! I am surprised Brewer went back to Minnesota, to be honest.
I am not.
I thought he would have went to a contender.
They are a contender.
Zing!
Pardon me, I've caught your disease. I think they're going to do really well. I can see why he went back there.
Do you think there is a real stigma with some GMs? Do you think there are some players that just look at some franchises and just go, whoa, that's your GM?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think the Clippers copped it for years with Elgin Baylor.
True.
Who else was known as a dud GM? There was a few around.
Phoenix?
Maybe? Yeah, well, who was before Steve Kerr? No, Colangelo was good. Steve Kerr was good. Then they got Lance Blanks. He was... Ooh.
I mean, you know, is there a reason that certain teams... let's look at MJ. And, well, actually, I know they do. You know, people look at Jordan as a GM and go, wow, man, one of the greatest players to ever live, but...
But then you've got guys like Jerry Krause, who was a donkey of a bloke, but but put together championship teams. And even though guys knew he was a donkey, he would still sign there because, A, you were playing with MJ, B, you had Pippen and PJ, so you're going to win.
Do you think Khan, though, was just a not cut for the job?
Of course he wasn't. He had no idea what he was doing. I mean, you heard all those stories. He wouldn't listen to scouts. And didn't he draft like 4 point guards in a row or something?
Johnny Flynn.
Two in the same draft?
I actually feel sorry for Johnny Flynn because he got drafted to Minnesota. They drafted Rubio. No matter how well Johnny Flynn played, he was never going to stay in Minnesota. I mean,
the plan was for him to play next to Rubio. That was Khan's grand plan.
What a load of garbage.
That was Khan's plan.
What a load of rubbish. I mean, if you're gullible to believe that, then you don't deserve to be in the league. I'm sorry. What a load of crap. See,
he went, I think it was the owner, Glenn Taylor.
If I was Johnny Flynn, I would have been firing my agent. What are you doing to me? You got me here on rent. Then he done his hip, which, you know, didn't help his cause any, but I mean.
And he lost pace with that hip injury.
Yeah.
Because he was speedy.
That was his rookie year.
And even playing with the Melbourne Tigers down here, he didn't look quick at all. Yeah. Like, when I went to watch him play, I was expecting like
a lightning fast point guard. You're expecting Ty Lawson.
I wasn't expecting Ty Lawson, but I was expecting a guy who could get to the cup whenever he wanted to.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't do it. And then guys would sag off him because he didn't have a consistent jump shot either. Yeah, that was Khan's plan, man. He told Glenn Taylor, like, I'm drafting Rubio and Flynn, and I think they can play together in the backcourt. You know, because Flynn plays a lot bigger than his size.
That's crazy. Khan!
But Flip Saunders, so far so good, I think.
We'll see. When the season starts, we'll see.
You are a fool.
Hey, I just had to backtrack and update. So on our last show, we, of course, talk about Michael Beasley and, you know, the troubles he's been in.
Yep.
We talked about him. Maybe the thing that he's been missing is that veteran, that mentor.
Bit of tough love.
Well, how about some tough juice? So yeah. Butler, Caron Butler, you know, has basically voiced out to the media and you know, in I suppose, a reaction to try and get Beasley to listen, or he thinks there's a lot that can be done for him. If he's kept in Phoenix, he's more than happy to mentor Michael Beasley.
I think it's fantastic.
I'm really happy Butler listens to the show. I mean,
yeah, well, it would have been nice if he gave us a shout-out in the press over there.
I mean, you know, he came down and he bagged the Clippers a little bit, had a little pot shot at him for...
Well, what did he say?
Well, he was just saying that, you know, no one from the Clippers gave him a call when he was traded or anything like that. He basically found out, you know, via ESPN or whatever, social media. But, you know, he went on to say that basically, you know, much like, you know, we have echoed, is that the talent's there. I mean, you know, you don't become a number two pick for no reason.
Well, look, I'll add there, if any franchises have troubled players, feel free to contact myself or Spanx McCoy, and we'll advise you on the best course of action for a small fee. Yeah, no, look, that's fantastic. He's so young and got so much talent. You know, maybe it's just what he's been, well, it has been, you know, what's been missing in his career, maybe. Someone who can show him how to just look after himself. And
I was trying
he might need to spend a bit of a stint in rehab, though, to get off the old hashish. Get off the old alcohol.
I was thinking today, though, who do you kind of the past, who would you compare Beasley to? I mean, you know, as far as I suppose as potential goes.
Oh, wow. Hit me.
And think of this with a really open mind. Because obviously he doesn't have the size.
I've got one, but go on.
A poor man's smaller version of Karl Malone.
That's just ridiculous.
I said open mind.
That is ridiculous. You are.
I mean, he doesn't have the toughness or anything like that, but, you know, a forward who can really shoot the ball.
Get off the medication, for God's sake. Oh, my God.
A poor man's...
Very poor. You realise this is Karl Malone you're talking about.
I did say have an open mind. Did I not say have an open mind? You're not very open right now, Vince.
It's close, man. I actually, now keep an open mind. But I actually hit a Tony Kukoc in his game. It said keep an open mind.
The Pink Panther.
The Pink Panther.
The waiter.
So, well, this one's a bit stoned. And
why don't we just say Walt the Wizard?
No.
Tony.
Yeah. Well, they're both 6'10".
Mm.
They both can shoot it. You know, they're streaky.
Mm.
Probably Tony's got a bit better ball handling skills, but they could both play the power.
Super Bees has got him on the athletic tip, though.
Yeah, well, that's all right. They're not. You can't find an exact match, but I'm just saying.
Okay, I don't hate it.
Just saying.
I'm not going to shoot it down like you shot mine.
Yeah, but yours was shit. And this is actually half decent. I'm telling you, mate. It's a good comparison. That's what he reminds me of, just a little bit. Remember BG, probably about 100 shows back, probably one of our earlier shows, actually, he said Beasley should concentrate on becoming a really top six man. I think he should. I agree. Like, I think he should try and do that now and then, you know, get his life in order, get off all the naughty stuff, all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, try and crack an opening, you know, starting lineup.
So if you have a player such as a Michael Beasley, you know, you're coming from Miami, is it better to go to, I mean, with all the expectations and, you know, that, you know, they obviously have the talent. Is it better to go to a situation like a Minnesota, like a Phoenix, where you have that green light to fill it up and, you know, to take those shots and to be the man per se? Or is it better to go to a more structured team? I mean, because I often wonder, like, we've talked in the past where it's like, you know, Beasley, it's like, well, you know, he had the best opportunity, but did he really? I mean, okay, he's gone to Minnesota, he's gone to Phoenix where, you know, he's had those green lights and he's allowed to, you know, let's face it, basically do what he wants on the court. Would it have been better of him to go to a more structured, you know, coach or to a more structured system? I mean,
okay, who was the NBA champion when he got drafted? What year did he get drafted?
Was it Boston?
Okay. Now say, okay, Boston win the championship, right?
Yeah.
Say they make this huge deal and they get the number two pick and they get Beasley. Now, he's not starting. He'll be coming off the bench. But that key word that you said before was structure. If he got a start like that, I'm almost certain you wouldn't be seeing the stuff you're seeing now from Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
I think probably the worst thing that could happen to him was going to a bad Miami team where he could just shoot it and then going to Minnesota and just being able to fill it up because Kevin Love wasn't there injured and all that sort of stuff. I think that structure you spoke of would have just held him in good stead. You had great pros that would have kept him in line and showed him the way to go about it in Pierce and Garnett and Perkins, Ray Allen. I think you're right there. I think you hit the nail on the head. That's what he needed.
Well, you know, I'm not. It's just that, you know, for the longest time, I thought, you know, his best chance was in actually Minnesota. You know, it's cold. It's not as if you're going to hang out outside.
That's when you get bored.
He's going to have. Bored. He's such a great shooter in college. I mean, and a decent rebounder as well. I mean,
but you're going to get bored there.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember listening to Timberwolves Explosion and. You know, I think Marcus said something along the same lines. Like, yeah, it's just, if you wanted to stay indoors, man, you can only watch so many movies. You can only play that so many amount of video games, you know. Like,
yeah.
Eventually you're going to go, geez, there's nothing to do. I'm going to smoke some weed. I'm going to get drunk or something. Like, I'm not saying Minnesota's a boring town like you are.
I didn't say that.
Because I do want to visit there at one stage. But, yeah, he just needed that structure, and like you said, well, hopefully now he's Caron Butler can just.
I mean, you know, they draft him in Miami. I mean, let's face it, they draft him. He has a season there, and then it's kind of the well, they kind of got him as one foot out the door, one foot in, you know, like.
And a kick to the guts too to be just traded for a second round pick.
Yeah, well, in all honesty, he was traded for LeBron James, so
well,
it was a part of it.
True, but man, come on.
I'm getting a little excited. I've nearly finished my list.
My
point guard list.
Ooh. I'm not, you know, I'm telling you now, I'm not having any injured point guards, you know.
No injured point guards.
Nah. Well, how can I? My two favourite ones have been out all year.
Yeah. But until I see them... If you feel like they're still a top 10 point guard, though... So, for all the listeners out there who have no idea what we're on about right now, I better elaborate. Every year before the season starts, we sit down and we go through our top 10 at each position. And our next show after this, I think we've pretty much got it down to our top 10 point guards for the upcoming season. So... it always ends usually in some head-scratching moments and some wild boasts, but all in good fun.
And I just want you to show Tony Parker some love for this year. You just, man, you underrate that guy so bad.
With good reason.
Oh, you are.
I've nearly finished it. I'm excited.
You've probably got five on the go. I'm just struggling where to put Mario Chalmers because he's got a very high opinion of himself. So I'm struggling to fit him in.
Top five, right? I mean,
oh.
I know Pumper's eager to see where we put Stephen Curry, but...
He's not a point guard, is he?
He's a point guard. What are you talking about?
Get out of town, Pumper. Jeez. we should give Pumper a shout-out, actually. He gave us like five on his last show. So give him a shout-out.
Pumper! How's that?
You idiot. You can find Pumper on Hoops Podcast on iTunes. He and Boof. And can I just say, I listened to Joey's last show. He did a solo and he was giving Pumper a shout out. And he called Boof. These Americans, they're so funny. He called him Boof.
Boof.
And he kept saying it, Boof.
I hereby dub thee Boof. Pumper like, and Boof.
He's like, yes, good to see Pumper and Boof. He loved our impressions the other day, by the way.
Oh, nice.
He said yours was shit, mine was good.
Well, I was not debating that.
And you can find us on Oddman Media and iTunes.
Yes.
And
Podomatic. www.theoddman.com. Go check it out. We're there. Of course, you can find more of the Courtside Madness on the site, www.crtsde.com. We're on iTunes and Podomatic. Search The Courtside Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, all caps Courtside, on Twitter and Instagram, at CRTSDE. Come check out all the action. Vince. What? It's been emotional.
Here it comes. And I just had the worst coffee I've ever made in my life.
Here it comes. Watch out.
Whoa.